an RKO radio picture. Nat Holt presents Randolph Scott in Rage at Dawn, co-starring Porris Tucker, Marla Powers, J. Carol Nash, with Edgar Buchanan, Myron Healy, Howard Petrie, Ray Teal, William Forrest, Denver Pyle, Trevor Bardett, and Kenneth Toby. Screenplay by Horace McCoy. Story by Frank Gruber. Musical score by Paul Sawtell. Director of photography, Ray Renahan. Produced by Nat Holt. Directed by Tim Whelan. This is the true story of the Reno brothers, Clint, a respected farmer, and Frank, Simeon, John, and Bill, who were the first train robbers in American history. Looting, burning, and killing, this infamous clan rode through the middle border states, setting the pattern for the great outlaw bands which were to follow: the James Boys, the Daltons, and the Youngers. The year, 1866. The place is southern Indiana. A rickety horse-drawn cart trundles up a dusty track overlooking a lush valley. In the back stand four of the Reno brothers, wearing Stetson hats and gazing about with anxious anticipation. The stern-faced Frank, his brow heavy and etched with thought. Sim, stoic, hook-nosed, and with shifty brown eyes. Behind him stands Bill, younger, with chiseled features and a narrow gaze. Lastly, John is perched at the back, calmly surveying things with a keen expression. Frank spies something amongst the trees nearby and taps Sim's shoulder.
Look, there's Dolby.
Dolby waves. He has several horses reined up around him. The Reno brothers relax and smile. The cart carrying the Reno brothers follows a winding path into the shade of a tree-covered ridge. From behind a rocky escarpment on the opposite ridge, a lone man tracks the brothers' progress closely. As they amble past far below him, he stands atop the rock, turns, and waves a white flag. Perched on the roof of a two-story building, a second figure waves a white flag, and from the balcony of his office, Sheriff Mosley calls to him.
Tell them we got it, Roy. All right, boys, now they're on the way. Now don't anybody get over anxious. These Renos ain't ordinary robbers. They got instincts like animals. Now the least wrong move and we can lose them.
So wait till they come out of the bank with the money. Understand? Out of the bank.
All right, now you deputies take your positions. The rest of you people take your places along the street like we planned.
The armed men scurry to their vantage points.
That's 3 cents. The big one's five.
The Renos are coming.
Too bad Mr. Peterson has to miss this.
I don't think we get the Renos to wait. They ready in the bank?
They got everything set.
Good.
To a couple in a small carriage.
Clear the street. The Renos are coming.
The Renos!
The four horses pulling the Reno brothers' cart are guided along a tree-lined track by two of the brothers' accomplices, Lee and Pete, who bring them to a stop on the outskirts of town.
Well, there's noise running, boys.
Frank passes out rifles, then turns to Lee and Pete.
Now, nice and casually, remember today you're a couple of farmers. You all set? Down out of sight and stay down.
While the brothers crouch below the sides of the cart, Pete releases the brake lever and spurs the horses into town. The The main street's empty apart from a few horses reined up outside various establishments. With their guns at the ready, the last few townsmen take up their positions on balconies, a cafe awning, and rooftops. Mosley hides in the farmer's market with the stool holder.
Now wait till they come out of the bank. This time we're gonna nail them with the goods.
The cart enters town and turns left onto the main street. The place is eerily deserted. Hidden in the back of the cart, the Reno brothers glance about with growing unease. Their accomplices, sitting at the front, shift awkwardly, and Lee voices his concern.
Awful quiet, Frank.
Yeah. I don't like it. It ain't natural. There ought to be more people around.
It's gotta be natural. Nobody knowed we was coming but us.
Making it easier to get away.
Frank's right. I don't like it neither. You getting jumpy in your old age, John?
Quiet!
What do you say, Frank?
Keep going.
The townsmen continue to watch from their vantage points. In the cart, Bill and Sim give their views.
We put in too much time to pass it up.
Well, right now, Frank might as well go through with it, huh?
Frank's scouring the road ahead.
What do you say, Frank?
We'll take it.
The brothers conceal their faces behind bandanas they have tied around their necks. The cart draws up outside the North Vernon State Bank, situated on a corner opposite the farmer's market. As the Renos pile out, the stallholder opens fire. The remaining brothers and their accomplices return fire as they beat a hasty retreat. Sheriff Mosley and his men break cover and fire at the cart as it tears through the town. A deputy's hit and tumbles from the balcony of the office and jails. Mosley mounts up and leads a pursuit posse out of town. The Renos and their accomplices race towards Dolby, where they ditch the cart, saddle up, and take flight. Mosley's posse are closing in.
All right, let's ride!
Frank leads his gang back along the route they took coming into Vernon. The sheriff's posse hold onto their Stetsons as the pursuit weaves around trees and shrubs in an arid terrain swathed with yellow grass. Thundering hooves kick up clouds of dirt in their wake. Frank leads his gang down the track overlooking the valley. But Mosley's posse are not far behind. At the base of the valley, the Reno gang enter a covered wooden bridge spanning a river. The sheriff stops his posse from following.
We couldn't arrest him over there even if we caught him. Jackson County. The Renos run it from top to bottom.
Well, we got one of them anyway.
Yeah. Let's head back.
The Reno brothers are having dinner at a table set for four at the centre of a spacious kitchen diner in a modest homestead. At one end, John chews his food thoughtfully. In the middle, Sam shovels some on a knife into his mouth, while at the other end, a troubled Frank sips from a saucer. He studies his two brothers, stares down at his untouched meal, and then over at an empty place set for Bill. Brooding, he puts the saucer down, rises slowly to his feet, and suddenly slings his chair across the room. A beautiful blonde woman rushes in.
Is that going to help? Is that going to bring Bill back to life?
Take it easy, sis.
How? Not knowing when you go out that door if you're ever coming back. This time it was Bill. And the next time, somebody else.
That's the way it is, Laura.
It doesn't have to be. You could leave the state. You could go somewhere where nobody ever heard of the Renos.
Where would that be?
Anywhere.
It was my fault, honey. I smelled it!
Ain't no use carrying on about it now. Important thing is, how did they know we was coming?
Yeah, how did they know? And so far ahead.
Maybe somebody recognized you last week when you were sizing up the job.
Maybe. But how did they know when we was coming?
The barking alerts them all. Two figures gallop onto the Reno's homestead, passing a crude tin windmill and outbuilding, before dismounting outside the main house, which nestles in the shade of several large trees.
Is that our dear brother?
Yes.
Clint, a stocky man with short graying hair under a broad-rimmed hat, comes in and moves towards Frank.
So it finally happened. Areno got killed.
Clint, we want no preacher.
Take it easy, sir. The baby of the family dying in the streets and his big, brave brothers running away. Not even animals would do a thing like that.
Dead in the street, not dying.
As if that made any difference.
That's enough of that kind of talk, Clint.
We sent for you, Clint, because we want you to go to North Vernon and get Bill's body. They'll let you have it.
You mean they won't arrest me?
The Reno that's honest, that's quite a distinction in this community, an honest Reno.
We rode into an ambush. Somebody told them we was coming.
That shouldn't surprise you. The Renos are worth a lot of money. Dead.
You knowed we was gone.
You accused me of being a spy! I'll kill you!
Wouldn't put it past you, you mealy-mouthed psalm singer.
He was right fond of Bill Clint. So was I. I tried hard enough to keep him from pitching in with you. And you, as long as you live, don't you ever accuse me of being an informer again. You got plans? Keep them to yourself. I don't want to know about them, not even accidentally.
You won't.
You're notorious outlaws. The law will get you sooner or later, and they'll get you any way they can. In the back, ambush, while you're sleeping, they'll get you. Bill's death was only the beginning. Can't you see that, Laurie?
He wrestles free of Frank and walks over to her. She's hugging herself shamefully.
Can't you see it?
I'm not doing anything.
You're harboring him.
What do you expect me to do?
Pa would never have left you the house if he'd known how you were going to use it.
I can't turn my own brothers out.
How far does loyalty go? They're not only destroying themselves, they're destroying you too.
Leave her alone, Clint!
Peterson won't leave her alone. He won't leave any of you alone.
We can handle anything that Peterson throws our way. Like you did today.
Frank glares at Clint, but his anger soon wanes. He turns away and leans on the dresser, wrestling with his conscience.
All right. I'll go to North Vernon and get Bill. We'll bury him beside Ma and Pa. Perhaps their souls will be a little less troubled now.
Clint casts a heavy look around the room and then stalks out. Seymour, Indiana. Outside Fisher's Fine Merchandise, Fisher and his clerk, Dedrick, are setting up stock when they notice something.
Three of a kind.
Such a gall. Such unmitigated gall.
Frank, Reno, and two suited officials walk together along the main street. Two women look on from a balcony whilst knitting.
Those kind would never be elected if the women folk could vote.
Yes, we'll get the vote one day.
Frank leads the other two into the constable's office. Across the way, Fisher comments.
Nobody to blame but ourselves. We voted him in.
Well, why don't we do something about it?
Have you forgotten? Edelbach tried. Look what happened to him. We'd best let Peterson take care of the Reno brothers.
He was waiting for us. Loaded up and waiting. Somebody told him we was coming.
Maybe Peterson's got a man planted in town.
Who knowed you was going to North Vernon?
You three.
Now, hold on, Frank.
He's not accusing us, Judge. He knows we wouldn't kill the golden geese.
Did Clint know you was going?
It wasn't Clint. He ain't one of us, but he wouldn't have no part of setting up an ambush.
Maybe it was Sim. He's kind of talkies when he's drinking.
Yeah, and he does most of his drinking at Murphy's place.
Yeah, and he's bragging.
And Murphy's the only new man to come to town in years.
You suppose Murphy's a Peterson man?
Frank removes his feet from the sheriff's desk and gets up. Then, with a thoughtful sigh, he heads out past the stout judge. Deputy Courtwright comes up to the bar at Murphy's saloon.
Give me a beer, Murphy.
Courtwright swigs it and watches the bartender as he moves away to clean some glasses. Sim staggers into the smoky establishment.
Hello, Sim. Doing a little drinking, eh?
Yeah, going to do a lot more. Shot him in the back. They shot him in the back.
Sim downs his whiskey.
Yeah, I heard about Bill. What happened over in North Vernon?
I made a mistake. I shot too fast, woke up the town, and they got Bill, shot him in the back. All my fault. Clumsy. All my fault.
Well, I don't think Bill would have felt that way. He always thought you were the best.
I was the best till I made that mistake. I let Bill down, and now he's dead. He's dead.
Yeah, we all have to go sooner or later.
At the other end of the bar, Courtwright surreptitiously eavesdrops as Sim beckons Murphy closer.
But they're gonna go sooner. Come Saturday, we're going back to North Vernon and blast the devil out. We'll get even for Bill. And this time, we'll get the money. We'll get the money this time.
Having downed another whiskey, Sim leaves, watched closely by Murphy. At night, Courtwright gallops over to the Reno's place where Frank, the sheriff, and the gang are waiting on the front porch.
Murphy!
What happened?
He closed the saloon about 10. I followed him home. Through the window, I saw him write a note first. Then he went out the barn, saddled the horse, and left.
Where'd he go?
Up the Glendale Road. Couldn't follow without him knowing it.
How long ago was that?
30, 40 minutes.
But where's he mail this note? He'd already hiked it someplace for another Peterson man to pick up.
A stinking spy.
We'll find out about that soon enough.
You reckon he'll be home by now?
We'll wait. We've got time. Tell Dobie to get the horses.
Frank leads Sim and John to a clearing behind some trees near a barn, and they all dismount.
Dobie, have them ready to mount.
The brothers enter the barn and move into the shadows at the sound of a horse approaching. A figure rides up to the barn's entrance, dismounts, and walks his steed inside. Murphy leads his horse into a bay, and as he's securing the reins, the Reno brothers break cover.
My Frank, where you been, Murphy?
Riding.
1 o'clock in the morning.
Is there some rule about when a man go riding?
You stinking spy.
Spy? What are you talking about, Sims?
You're a Peterson man.
Peterson man? You're crazy.
Don't lie to us, Murphy.
You know me, boys. You've known me for a long time.
Yeah. You know you tipped off Peterson that we was going to raid the bank in North Vernon.
Why would I do that?
Because you're getting paid for it.
You just delivered a letter saying we were going to hit North Vernon again. Didn't you, Murphy?
I don't know where you got such an idea.
We baited you, Murphy. Simi just played like he was getting drunk and giving away secrets.
We know that'd flush you out. And Courtright saw you write the letter.
Courtright's lying.
Get a rope.
Having knocked Murphy to the floor, John does as Frank orders.
You kill me, Frank. Somebody else will come. We'll handle him, too.
Time up to the stall.
Having kicked Murphy unconscious, Sim helps John tie the informant to a wooden stall dividing the bays.
John, get that horse out of there.
John backs the horse out, while Frank and Sim ensure Murphy's fastened tightly to the stall.
Maybe we ought to let him come too so he'll know what's happening.
Huh? Ain't got time.
Frank flicks a match to light.
There's another letter for Peterson.
And drops it into the tinder dry straw, quickly fueling the flame. Sim and Frank then leave Murphy to his fate. A newspaper headline in the front page of the Chicago Inter-Ocean reads, "Cremated Alive. Peterson's secret agent meets tragic death. Reno revenge for killing of brother in thwarted robbery." In an office at the Peterson National Detective Agency, a smartly dressed grey-haired man with a neat moustache shakes his head at the article. He's sitting behind a large desk. A younger man comes in.
Monk Claxton's here, Dad.
Oh, good. Have him come in.
Come on in, Monk.
Thank you, Bill. Hello, Mr. Peterson.
Glad to see you, Monk.
Sit down.
Thank you, sir. How are things in Denver?
Couldn't be better, Bill.
Did you read about Murphy?
Yes, sir, I did.
And that's what happens when something goes wrong. They're shrewd, those Renos, and vicious. Control a whole county in southern Indiana. Judge, prosecutor, constable, all on their side. Reno's had him elected.
I still wonder how a thing like that could happen.
Well, people who've had freedom as long as we have sometimes take it for granted. Come election day, they're lazy or callous. Same thing. However, it's done. Our job is to get it under.
Yes, sir. How do we go about it?
You're a married man, Monk.
Yes, sir. My wife knows the line of work I'm in.
I don't want you to jump into this thing.
I didn't know exactly what you had in mind, but to bring me all the way from Denver, the way I figure it, this is sort of a promotion.
Well, don't let your vanity get in the way of your better judgment, Monk.
I'm a working man, Bill, with a job to do. If I didn't like my work, I'd have gotten out of it long ago. In the war, we called it calculated risk.
Yeah, we did. I've got a new man I want you to work with, Monk.
I don't figure this is a time to break in a greenhorn.
All new to us, that is. He's had some experience along this line. Maybe not experience with this kind of violence, but I think he's the kind of a man that can handle himself in rough going. Name is James Barlow.
Barlow.
Well, I see you remember him.
It's the same James Barlow I'm thinking of. I do remember him.
He is.
He was in the employ of the Southern States.
Which we found out after the war. Mr. Greeley said that he was worth a whole army. It's the only thing that Mr. Greeley ever said that Mr. Lincoln agreed with.
I still wonder how he got hold of so many secrets.
Certain generals' wives found him very charming.
Irresistible is the word, Dad. As a matter of fact, I recall...
Well, I wasn't the only one that invited him to dinner. Secretary Stanton had him, too. Immodest as it may sound, man could fool Stanton and me, could fool the Reno boys.
That sounds mighty reasonable, sir.
You ought to trust him implicitly. Let him run the whole show.
How does he plan to get in with the Reno brothers?
He doesn't. He plans to let them get in with him.
A steam train forges across farmland that's dotted with trees, leaving a swathe of black smoke in the air behind it. Mounted and with another steed saddled and ready, the red-haired Monk Claxton looks up from the shade of a nearby tree as the steam train thunders past.
In making out your report to the sheriff on this robbery, my description is as follows. 6 feet three, 195 pounds, hazel eyes and brown hair.
6'3", 195 pounds, hazel eyes and brown hair.
Having briefed the train official, the tall, handsome James Barlow, who's dressed in black with a brown leather jacket and yellow bandana, gets an update from another member of the crew.
We're just hitting the grade. Be about half a minute.
Good. Pull the cord.
Now, you want me to dump the box, or you give me the signal?
Half right, jump. Take a few shots at it. Remember, I took your gun, but you had another one hidden.
First, I take some shots at you. When the train stops, I give the alarm.
Right, open the door.
The crew member slides open the carriage door, and as the train trundles past a grassy incline, he throws the locked money box out. Barlow jumps after it. Once he's got to his feet and replaced his Stetson, he guards the box and opens fire on the train. The crew member returns fire in the mock gun battle, during which Barlow shoots the lock off the box and Monk breaks cover with Barlow's getaway horse. He appears just as Barlow's bagging up the money from the box.
Right on schedule, Jim.
Barlow scatters a few notes to authenticate a rushed escape from the law. Then he and Monk ride away under a hail of carefully aimed bullets from the officials on the train. Headlines read, train robbery, incredible news from Lawrence County, Indiana. Train bandits, express box stolen, $30,000 taken, and train robbery, $30,000, bold execution. In Seymour, while townsfolk bustle about their business, Barlow and Monk pull up outside Fisher's store in an open-topped horse-drawn surrey. They're wearing clean-pressed trousers and shirts with string ties around the collar. After exchanging pleasant smiles, they head inside.
Morning.
Morning.
Ain't that old man U-Holt's rig?
Yes, he's my uncle. I'd like a side of salt meat, 10 pounds of sugar, 5 pounds of coffee, some baking soda, and a bathtub.
All right, mister.
Morning. Good morning.
I take it you're Jim Barlow, Noah U-Holt's nephew.
That's right.
Said a couple of days ago he was expecting you, staying at the farm.
Mm-hmm.
You're a painter.
Yes, I am.
What do you paint?
Things, people.
Like El Greco, Rembrandt, Van Dyke.
Not quite. This is Mr. Claxton.
How do you do?
Nice to meet you.
You a painter, too?
No, I'm just looking after Mr. Barlow. He's not fully recovered from the war.
Oh. Morning, Miss Laura.
Good morning, Mr. Fisher. Is my order ready?
Yes, just finished it.
She joins Fisher by Barlow at the counter.
Miss Reno, this is Mr. Barlow.
How do you do, Mr. Barlow?
It's a pleasure, Miss Reno.
Noah U-Holt's nephew. He's a painter.
Oh?
Will that be all, sir?
Excuse me, please. Mm-hmm.
$3.20.
Smitten with Laura, Barlow hands the clerk, Dedrick, one of several cash notes he's holding. Dedrick checks the till and then goes over to Fisher.
Mr. Fisher, can you change this?
Mr. Barlow, haven't you got anything smaller?
Barlow looks through his cash.
Sorry, I haven't.
Take all my change.
Here you are, sir. Thank you very much. And come again.
I'll do that. I'll be around for some time.
There you are, Miss Laura.
May I help?
Oh, don't bother.
Quite the contrary.
Well, thank you.
He carries a basket for Laura, who's wearing a fitted navy overcoat and bonnet. Outside Fisher's store, Barlow and Laura exchange furtive glances as they cross the street with her produce. Just then, Lee and Pete come out of another building.
Who's that with Laura?
I've never seen him before.
They decide to follow the couple to Laura's carriage parked nearby and watch as Barlow loads her baskets on the back and helps her up into the driver's seat.
Thank you very much.
I hope to see you again, Miss Laura. May I call on you sometime?
Boy, I'm afraid not, Mr. Barlow.
Who are you, mister?
That's none of your business, Pete.
Better be on your way, you.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
You heard him. On your way.
My friends, you haven't very good manners.
Barlow cracks Pete on the jaw and blocks a haymaker from Lee. Then, while Barlow removes Lee's gun belt, Monk hurries over and knocks Pete out before he can retaliate.
Monk, take his gun belt.
Monk hands it to Barlow with a puzzled frown. Laura watches quietly until Barlow turns to her and removes his hat.
Sorry, Miss Laura.
With a shake of the reins, she spurs on her carriage horses.
Still up to your old tricks, huh?
$30,000, Frank. That's a heap of money.
Are you out of your mind? I told you we didn't do this train robbery.
The robber wore a mask, had hazel eyes and sandy hair, was around 35 years old, 6 feet 3 inches, weight 195 pounds. The description fits you, John.
Careful, Lattimore.
It's a lot of other people, too. $30,000. The judge would be mighty pleased to share a heap of money like that.
We didn't do it.
But I wish we had.
Don't argue with him, sir.
You're in no position to get uppity. Listen.
You've got your full portion of every job we've ever pulled, and you'll go right on getting it. So don't come around here accusing us of holding out on you.
All right, Frank. But as prosecuting attorney of this county, I warn you...
Frank spits on Lattimore's charcoal suit. The attorney's glare is met with an impudent smirk until the sheriff leads Lattimore away. As the pair leave, Sim chuckles.
You sure was rough on him.
It'd be rougher not to accuse us anymore. Sit around doing nothing while we take all the chances.
Well, Ace is in the hole. You gotta pay for Ace's in the hole.
$30,000 is a heap of money.
Now, who'd have thought of holding up a train?
Seems like a business worth considering.
The sheriff and Lattimore speed away from the Renos in their Surrey, passing Laura, returning from town.
What was the matter with them?
Oh, money crazy as usual. They're accusing John of holding up the train.
Yeah, but Frank shut him up real proper.
You think it's smart to make them mad?
They better worry about making me mad.
The brothers move away, leaving Laura to unload the produce. Barlow and Monk draw up at Noah Yule's white-painted house. As they do, the middle-aged Noah comes out to greet them.
Yep, how'd it go?
Fine, Noah. You set it up well.
Good. Buy some extra shooting iron?
No, we met a young lady. Two gentlemen objected.
Turned out to be a couple of fellas named Lee and Pete.
Oh, they're a couple of the Reno gang.
The families?
No, just henchmen.
So...
Well, you certainly started the ball rolling, all right.
You sure did.
That's the object.
But the description does fit John Reno.
John Reno didn't do it. He never does anything by himself.
Frank does all the thinking.
Frank didn't do it either. Mine don't run that way. You're too suspicious.
We got a right to be suspicious. Our share keeps getting smaller and smaller. First thing you know, they'll deal us out completely.
How can they? We'll be reelected next month for two more years. They know which side their bread's buttered on.
You think we can get away with this for two more years? Our collusion with the Reno brothers is one of the worst-kept secrets in history. Collusion, conspiracy, malfeasance. Ugly words, Your Honor, but true. We've got to be realistic.
A bank job at North Vernon sure would have helped.
No need crying about that. We'll make it up on that Davies County job.
How much will tax collections run?
Might amount to $20,000.
This time we'll protect ourselves. We'll send Jason a court ride with him.
Oh, they ain't had no experience in that kind of thing.
Experience doesn't matter. When the money's counted, I want somebody there we can trust.
If you'll ever find anybody you can trust.
For you, Judge.
As the judge reads the note, he shifts in his seat at the courtroom table.
Note from Pomeroy at the bank. Just come across one of them $100 bills for the train robbery. Serial numbers checks.
Where'd you get it?
Wade Fisher's department.
You reckon one of the Reno spent it?
We sure gotta find out who spent it.
Sure, I remember it. First $100 bill I've seen in years, and all you Hall's nephews spent it.
The one that tangled with Pete McCartney and Lee Harney?
That's right. Name's Barlow. He's a painter. New fella.
You'd have to be new to tangle with those two.
Had a whole handful of $100 bills. Something wrong?
No. Just checking.
Outside, Fishers.
Did you hear that? A whole handful of $100 bills?
Something else, too. He fits the description of the holdup man.
I'd say he has some explaining to do. You fellas better get at it.
I'm getting sick and tired of you snarling at me.
Well, then behave yourself. You know how I feel about you taking up with strangers.
I didn't take up with him. He helped me into the buggy with my packages.
Well, the boys said you and him was getting mighty friendly.
Now you understand one thing. This is my house. You want to go on using it, you better be careful.
Laura storms out with a pail, knocking a tiny drawer out of its housing. Frank replaces it and joins his brothers round the table.
All right. Let's get back to the Davies County job. This time we're not all going in at once. Go in three lots.
John goes to the kitchen window in time to see Barlow ride up to Laura as she's fetching water outside. Barlow then tips his hat to her.
What is it? Somebody I've never seen before.
Frank joins him at the window, and upon seeing Barlow conversing with Laura, strides across the room to fetch his gun belt hanging on a wall hook.
Figured to bring these back. Guess those two have cooled off enough to be trusted with them. Besides, it gives me a chance to see you again.
Barlow starts towards the house with the gun belts.
Hold it.
Get inside.
Don't order me around, Frank.
What do you want?
Oh, why, nothing. I'm just returning some equipment that belongs to friends of Miss Laura's, some pistols.
Drop them.
Barlow does so.
Now back away.
Who is he?
I'm her brother.
Well, mister, I must say, you don't act very neighborly.
Got no cause to be neighborly. Get off of the property and stay off.
Didn't come to see you, came to see Miss Laura.
You heard me.
Stop it, Frank. Stop it!
It's all right, Miss Laura. Needn't be trouble. I'll see you someplace else. When you coming in town again?
She ain't.
In the morning.
See you then.
With a charming smile and a tip of his hat, Barlow mounts his steed and gallops off. Brooding, Frank puts his hands on his hips.
You may think you're spiting me, but let me tell you something. Anything goes wrong, you've got just as much to lose as the rest of us. Get that through your pretty little head, will you?
Get one thing through your head, too. I'm not a child, and I won't be treated like one any longer.
She glances back towards Barlow and then disappears into the house. In the dead of night, shadowy figures congregate under the porch of an outbuilding near Noah's house. They splinter into two groups, and while one moves away, two men from the remaining group scurry towards the property. One climbs onto its front porch, and the other heads around the back. In a spacious front room, Noah's watching Monk and Barlow playing chess at a circular table. Outside, more of the figures take up positions on the porch of the house, with their guns trained on the door.
I hear mice.
Barlow, Monk and Noah get up. Barlow grabs his wallet from a side table and slips it into his trouser pocket. Barlow signals for Noah to open the door.
Put your hands up. What's going on here?
You two.
Who are you?
The law. Anybody else inside that house, come out with your hands up.
I'll sue this county for every dime it's got.
Maybe not.
Mind telling us what the charge is?
Suspicion.
Or worse.
Suspicion of what?
Train robbery. Train robbery? Why, you're a bigger fool than I thought.
All right, boys, take him into town.
Well, you can't do this, I tell you. Most disgraceful thing I ever heard of. Who do you fellas think you are, anyway?
The law, that's all. Take him in.
As Noah and his guests are escorted away, Latimer and the sheriff linger to check Barlow's wallet.
Six nice, clean, crisp $100 notes.
Shall we just forget the judge and split this between us?
Why not? Let's have a look inside.
We were coming to Seymour from Robeson, Illinois. We saw the crowd around the money box. We went down there. There had been a train robbery. We found the money. I guess the robbers dropped it. For 3 hours I've been telling you that.
And for 3 hours I've been telling you we don't believe it.
I can't help it.
Sit down.
I have a drink of water.
No. The money matches. The description matches. Your arrival here matches. Everything matches.
Coincidence.
Where's the money?
You took it.
I mean the rest of it. The other $29,000.
Oh, what's the use? You won't believe me.
Any news?
I won't talk. How about him?
Nothing.
All right, on your feet. Come on.
Barlow rises before Courtright. Latimer and the sheriff walk past him. Then the attorney yells,
"Where's the money?"
Barlow makes eye contact with all three men before taking his seat again. They close in around him menacingly.
Latimer was asking him questions, and all of a sudden Barlow said, "Get the judge." And Latimer got excited, kept saying he was the prosecution attorney, and if Barlow had anything to say, he was the one to say it to. Naturally, I'm the one to talk to. Latimer tries to hog everything.
The sheriff stops pouring himself a coffee and lets the judge and Courtright into his office.
He wants to talk to you.
So we're here.
Go ahead and talk. Alone. You listen to me. I'm the prosecuting attorney here.
Wait outside.
This was my doing. He never budged till I threatened to get the express messenger down here to identify him. That's what weakened him.
Wait outside.
Latimer and the others reluctantly leave the judge alone with Barlow. Unhappy with them keeping the door ajar, though, he shuts and locks it. He then walks back across the room and takes a seat in the sheriff's chair.
Now, what was it you want to say?
Have a drink of water, Judge.
Go ahead.
Barlow steps aside, lifts the lid off a clay urn and dips a cup into it.
Do you appreciate irony, Judge?
How's that?
The imponderables. The little things that happen to wreck a foolproof setup that you can never figure will happen. This was a foolproof setup. I had a contact man in the express office who told me when the money would be shipped. I picked the perfect spot for the train robbery. The money box was open just right. And up to that point, everything was perfect. And then came the imponderable. In my hurry to get away, I dropped a few bills with serial numbers, and here I am. Irony.
Barlow drinks, allowing the judge to ponder.
Where's the money?
Hidden. My share, that is.
Your share? You're in this all by yourself.
No man could do this by himself. There were six of us, seven counting the contact man.
Where are they now?
Scattered.
That leaves three here.
Two, Claxton and me. U-Haul had nothing to do with it. He didn't know about it.
Claxton's share hidden, too?
With mine at the U-Haul farm.
Where at the U-Haul farm?
You couldn't find it. I'd have to go with you.
The judge snatches Barlow's cup and gets a drink for himself. Barlow smirks.
Now, you're a practical man, Judge. Sure, you can send Claxton to me to prison, but it won't get you a raise in salary and won't get you much of a reward. And as for me, with a contact man who knows when the big express money shipments are to be made, it'll ruin $1 million business.
You say you've got a contact man in the express office?
A big one. A superintendent.
Which office?
I'm a practical man too, Judge.
How do I know you ain't lying?
You think I held up that train on the spur of the moment? How do you think I knew the money was aboard? $1 million business, but not with me in prison. We don't get it, somebody else will.
You know, I like the way you talk. Like the way you handle yourself.
All I need's a little freedom.
It won't be that simple. A lot of people here in town know you were arrested with some of that holdup money in your possession.
All you gotta say is, I proved I found it around the money box. Others did.
And what guarantee have I got if I turn you loose, you won't pull out?
The best in the world. I need you more than you need me. This is a safe place to hold up between operations. Besides, if I did pull out, you'd still be better off by $3,000.
With a greedy smile, the judge goes back to the office door and unlocks it to find Latimer and the sheriff right outside.
Gentlemen, I guess we owe Mr. Barlow an apology. He's clean as a hound's tooth.
Wait a minute.
Perhaps you misunderstood me. Mr. Barlow had nothing to do with the train robbery. He found the money.
Oh, well, that was our opinion, too.
Yeah, clean as a hound's tooth.
Yeah.
Have Cordwright release the other two. I'm going out to the U-Haul farm with Mr. Barlow.
Mind if I go, too?
And me?
Try and stop you.
Oh, by the way, did you two gents give the judge his share of the $600 you took from me?
Barlow leaves the judge, glowering questioningly at his sheepish colleagues. They share an awkward look before dipping into their own wallets and offering the judge his share of the spoils. He snatches the money and stalks out.
There you are, Your Honor. $3,000. And this is only the beginning.
All right, so far so good. Now where do we go from here?
We have to wait for news from the head office.
Well, let's hope it won't be too long.
We hope stronger than you. Since we're the ones who've been cleaned out.
Well, good day, gentlemen.
I'd rather nab those three than to turn in the Reno boys.
Take it easy, Chip. One thing at a time.
Barlow and Monk leave. The sheriff and Latimer climb into the front of a carriage while the judge gets into the back.
Was that $3,000 even?
You'll get yours, Mr. Prosecutor. You'll get it.
Just ask you.
You know, I was just thinking. He'd be a good one to send to Davis County with a Reno instead of Jason or Courtright.
Maybe. One thing, he don't scare easy.
You reckon the Reno's a stand for it?
He'll have to. He'll make it a court order.
Come on. Yeah.
Anything else, Miss Laura?
Oh, yes, I'd like a side of bacon.
But yesterday...
I know. I'd like another side of bacon.
Very well. 8.5 pounds, all right?
Fine.
Anything else?
That's all.
Here's that article you asked for, Miss Laura.
Oh, thank you. Goodbye, Mr. Bishop.
Goodbye, Miss Laura. Howdy, Laura.
Oh, Clint.
Mr. Barlow, I'd like you to meet my brother, Clint.
How are you?
How do you do? Nice meeting you, Mr. Barlow.
He leaves Barlow to get the door. Barlow peeks inquisitively at the bag containing Laura's article, then follows her out.
Sorry.
Barlow picks Laura's article up, The World's Great Painters.
It's a book I borrowed from Mr. Fisher.
Interested in painters, Miss Laura?
Yes. 16th century painters.
Oh. I don't think you're going to find me in this edition.
The Reno brothers trot up on horseback in time to see Barlow helping their sister load up her surrey. He then takes her arm and helps her in.
What time shall we shop tomorrow?
A couple more shopping days like this and I can open my own store.
It's been a genuine pleasure, Miss Laura.
I agree. Thank you, Mr. Barlow. Good day.
They beam at each other, and he tips his hat politely as she rides off. Frank glances at his brothers and signals for them to follow him. They tail Barlow as he makes his way over to his horse, which is roped up outside a harness and saddlery store.
You aiming on getting yourself killed? Contrary, I was just planning my future. I don't like you, Barlow. Don't like you at all, but I admire guts.
Judge Hawkins says you're pretty good at train robbing.
Fair, I'd say.
Seems to think you're good enough to ride with the Renos.
That's a compliment. My partner and I'll consider your invitation.
No partners.
The judge didn't say nothing about nobody, just you.
I see. When do we go?
Now.
Now?
Where? When you ride with us, Barlow, don't ask no questions. Come on.
Barlow rides with the Reno gang, following the course of a shallow river alongside an incline shrouded with trees and shrubbery. Frank leads them off the track and across the river, which is several feet deep at its center. The horses make light work of it, and Frank stops his men when they reach the other shore.
Up! Let's give him a blow. Isn't that the state line we just crossed? Right. Any harm now in telling me where we're going?
Up ahead.
How much farther?
You ask too many questions.
What do you mean by that?
Look, you're along as an extra hand. You got nothing to say. Didn't the judge make that clear?
Yeah.
All right, now I'm making it clear, so get it through your head.
All right. Well, split up, circle around, and go in. Dobie?
Yeah.
You meet us on Church Hill. Pick John and Sim up in front of the surveyor's office.
Come on, John. Hey!
Gallatin, Davies County, Missouri. Dobie rides up to Pete and Lee, who are scouting outside a store.
Everything all right?
No, Frank, the courthouse is no good the front way. They got to go around the back.
But Frank didn't plan it that way.
Frank didn't plan to have the sheriff eating his dinner across the street either.
Oh.
John and Sim have rode to a quiet intersection. They dismount and tie their horses to a nearby railing at the roadside. John scans the area.
Sim? Hear me along.
Dolby crests a tree-covered ridge beside a hilltop church and waits. Frank and Barlow soon join him from the opposite direction.
Pete says we gotta use the back door of the courthouse.
All right, let's go.
Frank leads the other two back the way Dolby came. John and Sim wait patiently. Frank and Barlow trot into town, followed by Dolby, who's hanging back slightly. Sim glances over his shoulder.
Here they are.
Frank and Barlow are approaching along the street. They trot past John and Sim without acknowledgement, turning onto a side street with Dolby in tow. John and Sim then mount up and follow on behind. All five dismount outside the two-story red brick courthouse that's partially obscured behind ivy. They rein their horses up in bays outside the building. Dolby remains with the steeds, while the Reno brothers and Barlow head inside. An official descends a sweeping staircase and crosses a white-painted hall with a leather document holder. Once he's disappeared into the sheriff's office, Frank leads Barlow and the others into the hall, and they proceed cautiously upstairs. The first floor landing is dimly lit. At the far end, beside a stack of firewood, are the doors to the treasurer's office. Frank checks around before encouraging his brothers and Barlow to cover their faces with bandanas. They then draw their guns and head in.
We got men downstairs, so don't nobody hide. Over to the safe, you. Hurry up! Here's the wall. All right, open it up. Be quick about it.
Ain't much money in here.
I know what's in there. I'll fill that up. Get your hands a little higher, neighbor. You, get over there. Move!
Barlow spots a gutsy teller reaching for a gun under his desk and fires a warning shot.
What are you doing? Come on out here. Get out of here. Hurry. Stretch now.
Having got a bag of cash, the gang flee downstairs. Barlow leads the way out of the building, with Frank bringing up the rear. Dolby's got the horses ready for the gang when they race out of the courthouse. As Frank's climbing onto his horse, he chastises Barlow.
Too bad your brains don't match your guts! Ah!
The pursued posse quickly rides out, crossing a grassy plain and kicking up clouds of dust in their wake. Bathed in bright sunshine, the Reno gang speed through narrow gullies and up hillside tracks, weaving between rocks and trees. Barlow checks over his shoulder. The posse is some way back, so Frank brings the group to a halt beside the river on the border of Davies County and asks Sim.
How much you figure we got?
Plenty. Nice and clean, if I do say myself. We left those boys far behind.
Yeah, but they still got the telegraph on their side. This is where we split up. Every man goes back to the house his own way. Roundabout, too. Move out!
As the Reno's gang splits up, Barlow follows Frank, who stops.
I reckon you didn't hear me right. I said this is where we split up. I don't know this country. Well, go with one of them. I'm going with you. Seems as how you're the one that's got the money.
Frank's counting out the spoils on the kitchen table.
$21,220.
Well, split between 10 of us, that's $2,122 apiece.
That don't seem like very much. Could have been more.
Why wasn't it then?
Ask him. Everything was going fine till he took a shot at one of the clerks.
If I'd let him get his hands on that pistol, he'd have blown somebody's head off. Should have put him on the floor in the first place. Should have put them all on the floor the moment we went in.
You don't think much of the way I run things, do you?
No, not very much. $2,122 apiece for all this work and risk. You'd be better off if you went back to plowing.
Well, you'll get a chance to see what kind of a job you come up with.
Won't be for chicken feed like this. You can bet on it. Count out my share. I want to get to bed.
Laura's eavesdropping at the window outside and is shocked to see that Barlow's involved.
This time I'll divide with Claxon, but next time, he's got to be in on it. Good night.
Cold as an icicle.
Mighty big for his britches.
That is a six-gun real pretty, though. Real pretty.
As Barlow leaves the Reno home, Laura's hiding behind a tree.
You paint a pretty picture, Mr. Barlow.
He joins her, bathed in moonlight.
I'm sorry if I disappoint you, Miss Laura, but as you know, in our business, a little dishonesty is necessary now and then.
So you're no better than the rest of them. In fact, you're not as good. At least the Renos don't pretend to be something they're not.
I'm flattered by your interest, but if you were attracted by the painter rather than the man, maybe it's better you find out now.
I guess it is. I don't expect very much of people. But I believed in you. I wanted to believe in you. I wanted so much to believe in you.
She hitches up her thick dress and runs into the house, leaving Barlow staring after her thoughtfully. He takes a moment before walking away.
I can't wait any longer. I gotta get a message to Peterson.
Why don't you wait till morning, Monk? He'll turn up.
Maybe so, Noah, maybe not. He might have been sidetracked from his business. You know, I was warned about his fondness for women. You better get a horse saddled.
As you say. Somebody's coming.
Noah and Monk check the front windows.
That's funny. Going around the back.
They move towards the back, Monk with a gun at the ready, Noah holding a rifle.
Good evening, gents.
Hi.
Hi, Jim. Noah, I want you to get a ladder started on his way to Peterson.
I'll saddle up right away.
All right.
Where have you been, Jim? What happened?
Several interesting things, Monk. Several interesting things.
Letter from Barlow, Dad.
Good.
Peterson reads it at his desk, and his son Bill looks on.
He's making progress. Wants me to meet him at the sheriff's office in North Vernon as quickly as possible.
Oh?
Get word to our field man that I'll be there Friday night.
You best make it Saturday night. May take a little while to find Hieronymus. He's always on the move, you know.
Oh, Saturday, then. Hieronymus. What a name.
Yeah.
A haggard, stubbly man in a faded gray suit and top hat chews contentedly on a cigar as he drives a covered wagon surrounded by clinking pots and pans. On the side canvas are painted the words, Hieronymus, the biggest little store in the world.
Howdy, Noah!
Well, I'll be doggone.
Barlow and Monk are sharpening an axe.
You ain't the old medicine man yourself.
Sell anything new?
No, the old stuff's getting better.
Want you to meet my boys. Jim, Monk, come here. This my nephew, Jim Barlow.
Happy to make your acquaintance, Mr. Barlow.
Monk Claxton.
Acquaintance, Mr. Claxton.
What are you doing back in this territory?
Oh, I got a fine line of enamelware. Stewing pots and side dishes.
It's all right, you can talk now. We're by ourselves.
In my business, friend, caution becomes a habit. Barlow, Mr. Peterson wants to meet you Saturday night.
Where?
Sheriff Mosley's office in North London.
I'll be there.
At night, Barlow enters Mosley's office. Peterson's inside with the sheriff and another man.
That's probably Barlow.
Hello, Peterson. Glad you could make it.
Good to see you, Jim. Sheriff Mosley.
Sheriff.
Howdy, Barlow.
Deputy Barlow.
Howdy.
Howdy.
I was beginning to worry about you.
I did a little worrying myself.
How's Monk?
Oh, just fine, just fine. Sit down, sit down. Now, gentlemen, here's the layout. I got the clique all primed for a big haul. All that's necessary is to bait the trap, but we must bait it well.
Telegram, Indianapolis. James Barlow, Seymour, Indiana. Based on yield this year, the next corn crop should reach 100,000 bushels and will need your help to farm. Aunt Mary leaves here Friday the 11th on train 58 on her way to Louisville. Try to see her for a moment at Seymour. What does this mean?
That's from the contact man at the home office of the express company.
Oh.
It means train 58 leaving Indianapolis for Louisville this coming Friday will be carrying $100,000.
$100,000?
So that's it. $100,000.
It's the answer to everything. It means we can go to California.
Now, gentlemen, I wouldn't be buying my tickets yet. Remember, Friday's only 3 days off. That won't give me enough time to get my men together. Claxton and I can't handle this by ourselves.
You got the Reno boy.
I don't get along with them. They're clodhoppers, crude.
They done good so far.
Reputation, yes, but they're still clodhoppers. This is a big job. It has to be handled right. Otherwise, I'd rather pass it up and wait for another one.
But when'll that be?
I don't know.
But if the Renos followed your orders on this...
You know how they feel. Frank wants to run everything.
But suppose he lets you run it.
Yeah.
You understand? They're my instructions. I won't have any arguments from anyone.
Over that kind of money, we can afford to let you run things.
There can't be any hit or miss about this. We'll meet at the U-Haul farm at 5 a.m. I'll be waiting.
Lattimore watches with the Reno brothers as Barlow strides towards their front door. The sheriff opens it.
I'll be waiting.
Outside the Reno's house, as Barlow walks towards his horse, Frank, Sim, Lattimore and the sheriff appear on the porch. They watch him mount up and ride off. Then Sim comments.
I'll blow the top of his head off.
After we get the money.
Barlow gallops back to Noah's.
Hello, friend.
Barlow, I gotta talk to you.
What about?
Laura. I want you to get her away from here before it's too late. I've tried to get her away myself. Even offered to leave the county with her, but she's loyal to my brothers.
I don't know that I can do anything about it.
You can break her loose. That's what you can do about it. My brothers are no good. They're destroying themselves, they're destroying Laura, and maybe you too if you don't get away.
But I,
She's worth saving, Mr. Barlow. Believe me, she's worth saving. Take her away. She'll go with you. She's in love with you.
Seems to me this is something she should say for herself, Clint.
A steam train powering across the countryside, belching smoke into the air.
What time is it?
I don't know, but it's getting mighty late.
Here he comes. Let's get ready, boy.
The Reno gang lift their bandanas into place and scramble up a dirt incline towards the railway track. On the opposite side of the track, behind some shrubs, Sheriff Mosley waits with a posse. The train winds its way closer.
Around the bend.
Jake, take your men around the other end of the train and be quiet. Come with me.
Mosley's posse splits up. On board the locomotive, Barlow appears at the end of the lead carriage and uncouples it from the rest of them. As the rest of the carriages fall steadily behind, He clambers up onto the roof of the lead carriage, pulls his bandana down over his face, takes out his gun, and leaps onto the wood store at the back of the train's steam engine. He then makes his way to the engine cabin and barks to the drivers.
Engineer, stop the train!
The Reno gang are poised behind the dirt mound as the train crawls past. Then they break cover as it squeaks to a halt. Barlow meets the gang by the express and baggage carriage.
Open up or we'll blow it off! Come in!
All right, open it.
Bring up that cash box!
A crewman slides it over, and the Reno's gang take it aside. Barlow remains by the train, and Peterson appears.
Drop your guns, you're surrounded.
That's no good, Barlow's an agent.
Mosley's men ride into action, blocking the gang's retreat. The brothers quickly find cover and pick off several of the sheriff's men. Barlow is already crouching behind a thick wooden beam and exchanges fire with Lee. Frank hides behind a forked tree, and nearby, Monk does the same.
Well, he never could shoot anyway.
Simon, you're right.
Another of Mosley's men is hit. Frank takes a shot and then dashes away from his tree. Barlow takes a moment to reload. Lee takes aim, but is out of ammo himself.
Pete!
Pete's hiding behind a rock, exchanging fire with Monk, when Frank crawls over, drawing a shot from Barlow, which ricochets off a rock in front of him.
Gotta get to Barlow!
Mosley is shooting from the cover of some bushes. Amid chaotic gunfire, Frank scurries over to a tree and manages to get behind the train unseen. Meanwhile, Barlow dispatches Lee. As Frank creeps towards the front of the train in an attempt to get the jump on Barlow, the train driver spies him from his engine cabin.
Look out, Barlow!
Barlow gets off a shot in his retreat to the engine cabin. His second forces Frank to flinch as it hits metal beside him. Frank then climbs up the front of the train, peers around the side, and they fire. But miss each other. Frank then edges towards the cabin from the other side. As Barlow retreats, he gets off a shot. Frank returns fire before leaping from the train, but Barlow spots him and takes aim. Frank slumps to the ground, but then manages to scramble over to a tree. Pete is still engaged in a heated exchange with Monk. Sensing that the fight is nearly won, Monk breaks cover and runs forward.
Throw that gun over here!
Pete flings his gun aside.
All right, come out of there! Hands up! Come on!
As Pete walks towards Monk, he surprises him with a high kick that knocks the agent's gun to the dirt. The pair tussle, and Monk stops his attacker from reaching the discarded weapon. They exchange vicious blows, but then Pete lands an uppercut that sends Monk sprawling. Pete then grabs a nearby boulder, but Monk's fallen by the gun and quickly takes aim. Pete drops the rock and slumps to the ground. But as Monk gets to his feet, Sim shoots him. and John joins his brother by some rocks under a fallen tree. They exchange fire with Peterson and a train official. Then John notices Frank in pain nearby.
Sam, look, they got Frank.
All right, they got him. Shut up!
No. We ain't got a chance here. I'm gonna give up.
The what?
Don't shoot!
I give up!
Come back here, you rat!
Barlow shoots Sim in the arm.
Take him into town, boys.
The sheriff's men help Frank to his feet while Barlow goes over to Sim.
One.
Why don't you let me shoot the yellow belly?
We are saving him and you.
All right, take him off.
Come on.
Mosley, did you get the man with the horses? We got the lot.
As Peterson crouches by Monk's body, Barlow and Mosley hurry over.
Poor Claxton. He didn't know how right he was when he called this a calculated risk. Lost a good man, Peterson.
The headline reads, Reno Brothers captured, trapped by Special Agent Barlow. Seymour citizens demonstrate against county officials.
You get what you deserve.
You people have no authority to do this.
We'll show you who has the authority.
This is imponderable.
And they may get loose. They may, indeed. Nobody knows what the Renos can do.
We simply cannot take any more chances with them, not only for our own sakes, but for the sake of the whole state. All around us, other counties are decent and God-fearing, while we have been notorious. This is not my idea. This is the idea of the majority of you. None of us is excited. None of us is hot-headed. This is something that has to be done, and done with as little compunction as you would kill a rattlesnake. Anybody got anything to say?
As long as the Renos are left alive, there's always the threat that we'll be terrorized again.
I say the time has come for us to make sure we can live the rest of our lives in peace and quiet.
And to take some of the shame off Jackson County.
Anything else?
We've talked enough. Let's get the job done.
It's now 11 o'clock. We'll leave right away. That should put us there by 3 while it's still dark.
Come armed and with masks.
The people of Seymour scatter. Barlow rides through the night along a tree-lined road. A cloaked figure takes aim in the shadows. Barlow takes cover in Noah's wood store. Alerted by the gunfire, Noah rises from his seat. Outside, Barlow throws a log to distract his attacker. He then rushes towards the barn and takes aim from behind a tree. Noah appears on his front porch, rifle in hand. Barlow leaps over a wheelbarrow and spies him heading towards an outbuilding. The hooded figure turns to aim at Noah, but Barlow pulls his trigger first and shoots the rifle from the cloaked person's hands.
Come out of there. Come on.
Barlow's shocked to hear a woman sobbing. He goes to investigate and, pulling the woman's hood back, discovers...
Laura. It had to happen, whether they were your brothers or mine. I'm sorry I couldn't tell you the real truth about myself.
Oh, oh Jim!
Who's in there? It's all right, Noah.
You, Jim?
Yeah.
Well, sounded like you're trying to get yourself some night owls. What's going on here? Oh. Who is it?
Clint, this is you all. Where's Barlow?
He's here.
There.
Oh, Mr. Barlow. Laura. They're after Frank and the others.
Oh.
Fisher and the mob. They're headed for North Vernon.
Look after Laura.
Oh, Glenn, what happened?
Fisher, Dedrick, and Foley are the leaders. They've stirred up the whole town.
Barlow leaps onto his horse and rides out. The Seymour mob is already saddled up and heading for Vernon. Barlow has just crossed the covered border bridge and gallops along a track of loose scree and dirt. In a cloud of dust, the mob forge onward to exact their own brand of justice. Barlow urges his steed onwards. The mob eventually reaches Vernon and tie their horses up at some railings. With Barlow near the outskirts of town, Fisher leads the Seymour mob along the main street. Sheriff Mosley's at his desk while his deputy pours some coffee. The mob approaches the sheriff's office, and Fisher leads the way inside.
Don't move.
Raise your hand, Sheriff. Stand up. Don't reach for your gun.
What do you want?
We want the Reno brothers.
You've been got no
Give us the keys.
Hearing the commotion from the jail, the Reno brothers stir in their cells.
Give us the keys. Simmy, you hear that?
We want the Reno brothers.
Yeah, I heard them. You men got no right
Give
to...
Give us the keys. Well, you guys weren't
last. Mob members prevent locals from entering the sheriff's office.
Hurry up, we haven't got all night.
Mosley fetches the keys from his office drawer and throws them to Fisher.
Which way?
There.
All right, take them out.
The sheriff and deputy are led away, and the rest of the mob head for the jail room.
All right, boys.
As Fisher starts unlocking cells, John panics.
Oh. No, you can't! Frank! No! You've got to give us a trial! No! No!
Shut up and stop begging like a yellow belly.
All right, drag him out of there.
Two men try to help Frank off his bed, but he shoves and kicks at them.
I had forgot how to walk.
He winces as he leaves his cell. Three nooses have been erected over ceiling beams.
Get your hands off of me.
Barlow rides up to the sheriff's office.
You keep out of this, Barlow.
You're breaking the law. I'm going in.
We're the law now.
You're a mob.
We're the citizens and we're going through with this.
Barlow shoots his hand and enters.
Get away from those ropes!
Too late, Barlow.
You want law and order. Is this the way to get it with a mob? The Renos are going to be tried. Tried, legal and proper.
They're going to be hanged now.
Get.
Drop that gun, Barlow.
Get on with it.
I know you, Fisher, and you, Dedrick. If you hang these men...
But at gunpoint, Barlow's powerless and is sickened as the mob hoists the Reno brothers up on their nooses.
All right, Fisher. Who are the others? Dedrick, who were they? I don't like lynchers much better than I like outlaws. Put them in the Reno cells.
It was worth it.
After a few years behind the bars, maybe you'll change your tune.
Mighty good shooting, Barlow.
Sorry, fella. Didn't do much good after all.
A doctor's bandaged the mob member's hand. As Barlow comes out of the jail house, a crowd of locals park for Clint, arriving with Laura on her surrey.
You shouldn't have come here.
I had to.
I'm sorry, Laura. I tried.
I know.
The pair gaze at each other for a moment, until Clint offers Barlow the reins. He stares at them forlornly, then notices Laura's hopeful expression, and finally accepts them. Clint steps down from the carriage, allowing Barlow to sit beside his love. Barlow taps the reins lightly, and the locals stand aside again as they ride away together. Thus, the Reno brothers passed into American folklore. The end.